So like everything like fish is out there, right? Like shedding out, it's like slime and scales and stuff, right?
Right, yeah.
And,
so
that gets in the water.
Right.
Right? So every species, even bugs, right? They're all everything.
Yeah, any species that you've developed an assay for, so like to test your sample against. If you develop an assay for it, you can get it's a binary yes or no. The species is present or not. A shortcoming of that is you don't know how many fish contributed to that sample or organisms contributed to that sample, and you don't know how far away that organism was. So you can imagine in an intermittent stream, you could probably guess it was nearby because you didn't have that DNA floating down into your sample cup. But out here in the Eel River, if you were to take a sample of a pike minnow DNA sample, of course it would be positive, but you wouldn't know what fish contributed to that DNA, how many, what age it was, was the age structure feeding into that sample. So really it's a supplementary tool for monitoring that can help you focus your monitoring efforts. And you can do a rapid distribution assessment of a watershed. So if you want to bump around, like I did in like a headwaters into a toll, you can get a snapshot of where, let's say, juvenile coho might be rearing in the summer. So you get a positive coho sample there. It's a juvenile, right? That comes to the year. So you can kind of use it as a tool to shape maybe your follow-up questions. And again, that's what we did here in the book for. But
sorry, we're getting a backup ready for you.
There's one thing I forgot to mention, and that is that the one thing you don't want to do with extraction is to do it for a short duration, because that will actually cause a release in the pike minnow population, and you may get more pike minnow on the backside than if you didn't do anything else. So thank you for the one I didn't get to say.
Do you use the
same?
Yeah,
use this cable.
Use the HDMI.
Who processes these samples and what do they process?
We use the U.S. Forest Service Lab and the National Genomics Center, but there are dozens of entities that can do it for cheaper. HSU, they do it there. They've got a couple of master's students that have worked on environmental DNA.
That's all.
Don't quote me on it, but I think at HSU they were getting each sample processed for like $30, something like that. We pay the Forest Service Lab $80. There's a lot more overhead there. You're paying a full-time staff members far away. But and the startup cost for the sampling kit that we used was about $2,500 for the pump and the other supplies. So that gets you going, and the Forest Service will actually send you the rest of the supplies as needed. That's part of the $80 per sample. But environmental DNA was just a component of what we're doing here. What I'm going to talk about today, it fed into it. But it's kind of what made it a little more novel than maybe some of the other pike minnow surveys.
Cool.
An application of it was a rare example of where environmental DNA was a cracking component in order to inform future survey years.
Darren, way to roll with the punches.
Yeah, we're ready. Thanks, Tom. We're ready.
Sorry about that.
All right, so I titled my talk today, North Fork Eel River. Oh.
Lights.
Okay.
Is there house lights? Anybody know how to do that?
Yeah.
There we go.
Okay. I'll try to flip through as quickly to keep on time, but... So I call it the final frontier for Sacramento pike minnow in the Eel River. I'll get to it a little bit more, but essentially for the 40 year history of pike minnow in the Eel River, North Fork Eel was thought to be spared from the invasion. And so it's a major tributary that's got something special going on. Here's the watershed, this red circle here. That's showing you it in relation to the Middle Fork and the South Fork, and is it the Wild and Scenic River layers, the Wild and Scenic section of the Van Dusen. Let's see. It's the fourth largest trib in the Eel River. Half of it's federal land. You have the headwaters up here. Can you see the green? Can't really. That's Forest Service all up here. The yellow is BLM, so that's where I've been interested. And then Round Valley tribes. Man, it's all the same color, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the Round Valley tribes. And then so there's only one access point to the public in the whole basin, and that's Mina Bridge here. And that's just upstream of this red triangle. Not a lot of people live there, maybe 200 people, I think was the estimate. And to get there from 101, you can kind of go through Alder Point and come down the ridge here. A long ways away from where most people live. It's really hot in the summer, pretty lethal temperatures for steelhead. Not a lot of monitoring's going on there, essentially. What makes it really special when it comes to pike minnow and Chinook as well is that right here, 5 miles upstream, this is the main stem eel. 5 miles upstream, you see this red triangle I put. That's a barrier called split rock. And there's only been like one, there's been like a Chinook jawbone found decades ago above split rock. That's the only record of Chinook. This is, you know, 30 miles of main stem Chinook spawning habitat, essentially off limits. And compelling records of any pike minnow in that same time. So since pike minnow have been in the eel, no eyeballs on a pike minnow by anyone. And there's been 4 to 5 survey efforts, snorkel survey efforts in the summer. For certainly, if they were pervasive, you know, you would have come across a few. So.
Looks like you have a hand up.
Oh, yeah.
There is two.
Okay, yeah, so the Round Valley tribe, you'll know. Yeah, so imagine in a year like this year, probably so, I'd imagine, but
maybe.
But we're not seeing
only the high water users. There's not enough water to pass the crop.
Right.
High water users.
Right. And I think my next slides are photos of this.
And color don't get color and get past it at all.
Yeah. Right. But we know steelhead certainly do. Yeah. So here's split rock from above. You see that it's a pretty unique geologic feature. Really steep with a lot of boulders. Let's see, here's Walker Wise, the Eel River Recovery Project. He came out with us. This is it from down low, just a bunch of boulders calving off, forming the feature. Here's Emily Maloney, our Watershed Stewards member, 2 years back. Kind of standing in kind of one of the pinch points for migration.
Keep in mind it didn't look that way. It's been blown 3 times by fish and game since 1950.
Right, so it's been modified for fish passage reasons.
At least 3 times
so.
The tribe has been involved in reactive explosives.
Can you speak up? Can't hear you over here.
He was just saying that fishing game and the tribes have tried to modify this feature to allow for Chinook and steelhead passage. And now that sparks a question, it'll also be for pike minnow passage at this point in time. So it's served as a steelhead. Steelhead can get above it, and you see steelhead rearing above, but not a lot else. And then here's kind of when we went there last summer, kind of one of the critical kind of jump points. I think this is 8 feet, something like that, and a deep pool below a bedrock scour. So it's just a gnarly reach. You know, some of these other tribs in the area have some, you know, the Van Dusen and the Middle Fork kind of have these same features going on, but this one is particularly special in this 5 miles from the main stem eel. So it's a filter really early, really low down in the system. So the pike minnow story, Pat sent an email out to some people in 2016. I think the video he posted was pike minnow where they aren't supposed to be, something like that. And he got a video of a 14-inch pike minnow up here at None of the Above Ranch, which is Brett Lovelace and his crew. They have a ranch right up here and provided some access. And then they got me thinking, like, oh man, there's a pike minnow in the North Fork Eel. We need to get out there and take a look. I just got my environmental DNA capacity. I thought, you know, maybe if there's a few, maybe we could figure out where they were, even if we couldn't see them. You know, if they're hiding under a log, maybe environmental DNA would let us narrow down maybe where that fish was. Or maybe there's hundreds, maybe there's thousands, no one knows. At this point. So to develop the assay, I needed fin clips to send off to the lab. they could verify every, you know, that the eel, they could test for eel or pike minnow. Went to the HSU fish lab, the fish collection, and the pike minnows that we were clipping had NFE on them. I was like, oh man, North Pole eel, you know, right? In 2011, actually some small, probably one-year-old pike minnow juveniles have been e-fished at Minot Bridge, which is above Split Rock. So we know in 2011 there had been reproduction. There had been reproduction above Split Rock Barrier. So now the story's changing, right? We've had reproduction above. It's not a fluke, 14-incher, you know, one lucky fish that got above. It's more complicated than that. So we kicked off our environmental DNA and snorkel surveys in 2017. In the summer, and we just wanted to determine what was out there. You know, where are they? You know, is it multiple year classes? And how many of them are there relative abundance? In 2017, we did 7 miles, so from Minot Bridge up 5 miles, and then we dropped in at Salt Creek up top. I'll show you a map in a second. And then, that was just, we wanted to hit the bottom and the top to see, you know, did we get hits in the bottom and top? And then we could, you know, probably connect the dots and say, okay, it's been invaded. But if we saw, you know, if we stuck to just down low in 2017, there'd be so many question marks surrounding our results. And then 2018, we did 15 miles, and that was from Split Rock, just below Split Rock, 15 contiguous miles up the watershed. And we expanded our environmental DNA survey effort to 48 samples. So 300 to 500 meters between samples. Here's a kind of an example of what environmental DNA sampling looks like. You put a cup in the water, you pump it through, and your filter is your sample. The filter that's in this cup is your sample, and that goes back to the lab. And here's our crew. This is at Brett's place, none of the above ranch. Without this access point, it would have been super difficult. We'd be camping on the river each night instead of having a jump off point. Went over it really quick earlier, but maybe a few other things. Let's see, we talked about you're filtering the fish stuff out of the water column. So you're putting your tube out here, your cup out here, you're running a pump, and we do 5 liters, that's a floor service protocol. That's more water than most literature you're seeing right now. It takes more effort, but your detection probability goes up with every liter of water you're pumping through. You're more likely to capture some DNA. But probably 10 to 15 minutes a sample for us to stop, unload, take a sample, pack up, and keep going. And here's that filter. Use forceps. You're super paranoid about contamination between samples. And then you're hitchhiking through a watershed, and you're bringing DNA with you. So you're starting downstream, working up, so you're not kicking up rocks, suspending the DNA, and then sampling it down low. So 2017, we had equipment failure, so we only had 2 eDNA samples down low, but we didn't see any pike minnow in the 7 miles that we surveyed, but we got 1 positive eDNA sample. So without that, we may have come to the conclusion that pike minnow weren't there, or it was a fluke, or, you know, or maybe there's just that one that Pat saw, still hanging out, we didn't make it, you know, up there, but we got that positive one. And that got us interested to come back and give it a better go and learn more. And here's that Salt Creek confluence, that's where we dropped in up top. You can put it in at a bridge up there and hike down a mile to the upper North Fork main stem. So 2018, oh man, my little fish cutouts didn't work. So it looked really good on my screen yesterday. 2018 was much different. We actually saw an adult, about a 20-incher, and then 6 what I call sub-adults, fish probably getting ready to be sexually mature, and then 60 juveniles. And I've got the counts here. So here's Minot Bridge, that lower dot. So Split Rock is right here, right off the map, probably. And we're taking DNA samples, bumping up the creek. And we're looking at each other like, hey, no pike minnow. I think maybe last year's results, maybe it was one fish. You know, they're not pervasive. This is like primo pike minnow habitat. It's warm waters. There's nice pools. Why aren't they here? We're scratching our heads. They weren't in the reach. We went back a month later. They weren't in the reach from Minor Bridge to Split Rocks. That's 2 miles. No pike minnow. Then we get to the, the worst pool in the North Fork. Right? It's the best pool in the North Fork. It's the deepest, most complex pool in the North Fork. And guess what? We had the one adult and the 6 sub-adults. They all chose that one pool. And we had 60 juveniles, and they were spread out, really interestingly, all evenly through this next stretch. Besides the pool just above where the adult and sub-adults were, we had a cluster of 20, probably 6-inch-ish kind of size pike minnow. So we've got this cluster of the fish we really don't want kind of in this section of the river, and then evenly spaced. You know, we didn't see more than 5 in any other pool, which is kind of weird. When you go to the Eel River, if you see a pike minnow, you're going to see a couple hundred probably, right, in a pool. But here it's weird. So here's a Brett. We just saw the adult pike minnow. He's pretty depressed right here, but he lives on the North Fork. He's invested and totally bummed out. Here's a typical juvenile habitat. So I think those 20 juveniles were seen in this little area, 6 feet deep, some boulders to pop under. They got used to us after a while, but we were surprised to see 20 right there in one spot. That, right after we saw the adult, we saw 20, so we thought we were in for a day's worth of pike minnow. Here's a typical juvenile picture. We've got you saw we had some like one pike minnow in one pool. You know, these are large pools, but you see one or two. This is what we're seeing, a field of roach, and then you've got your pike minnow popping out. And they were just large enough, kind of how Pat mentioned, the six inch ones really stood out from these 4-inch, 3-inch roach. So we were afraid we weren't going to be able to detect them, but after staring at roach all day, seeing thousands, they stood out. It's pretty clear. So here's where the adult and sub-adults were found. I think this pool probably got to be like 15 feet deep, something like that. It was complex. This you imagine along this edge here, it's really deep. We had a bunch of wood sunk to the bottom. It was where it made a lot of sense for the pike minnow to be there, in my opinion. So that's what we did, and so my conclusions were that we have at least 3 year classes present. The 2-year-olds were the ones that were kind of the little guys, I think, the 6 to 8 inch fish. And those who know pike minnow better than me chime in, but I'm pulling this from like Brown 1990, where he collected a bunch of different pike minnow aging growth data and smushed it together. So I'm going to speculate that there was spawning above Split Rock 2 years ago in 2016. We've got these 4-year-olds, I'm going to call them, like the 10 to 12 inchers that I think, Brett, you may have mentioned that those are some fish that can probably jump and move around. So there's 6 of them. Like, why would there be 6 in 15 miles in one spot? So I've labeled them, are they nomads? Are these the fish who were just wanting to see what was above Split Rock, gave it a go and got lucky and only 6 of them did it? Or are they born in the North Fork Eel, like I think these 2-year-olds were? But why are there only 6? And then this one up here, maybe it's 7 years old, maybe it's 8 years old, I'm not sure. But so those little fish that were sampled at Minor Bridge in 2011 that were in the fish collection, you know, projecting out, that's how big it would be this last summer. That's how big that cohort would be if they're following these rules or these lines. And so I'm, you know, question mark here, like, maybe a few survived, maybe it was just one, or maybe this adult made it past Split Rock last year, or 4 years ago, or 2 years ago. There's no telling.
Yeah, do you think they'd be in long enough to produce that 2-year class? 7 years old.
Right, yes.
5 years old.
Yeah, well, yes. So at least two fish were above split rock, right, to produce these fish. So I'm going to guess this is a mom or dad. It was in the right reach of river, and it was big enough to reproduce. So there's more than one adult. During the spawning window, there was at least one adult. We don't know what happened after the spawning window. And one of my theories is that split rock is a leak, is a valve of sorts, a one-way valve 99.9% of the time, to where you can come, but you can leave, but you can't come back, right? And so this one adult found the best pool in town, and I'm guessing said, why would I ever leave? I got a good thing going. Maybe there's another adult or two we missed. You know, it's imperfect surveying, but we know there's one, and we've got six ready to go probably this summer, or maybe next summer, getting to spawning age. So that's kind of, if I can instill a sense of urgency in the crowd, it's that we have a place that doesn't have a pike minnow population yet, but we've got 66 that are in a really good place to survive and are working towards spawning age. Right. So and then really low abundance, which makes me think maybe one spawning event produced these fish, maybe two. It's not compelling that there's a lot of spawning activity going on above split rock. And they were, like I was saying, kind of kegged up in the lower reaches, the higher numbers, the bigger fish, and that pocket of 20 juveniles were lower down. So it doesn't seem like they've pushed up. Actually, I need to back up to this eDNA slide right here. We had positive samples the whole way up, and we went to Holes Creek as well, the biggest trip in the North Fork. Our terminal samples, both in the North Fork eel and the Holes Creek, came back negative, right? We saw fish, and they were all positive eDNA samples the whole time until we decided to stop due to logistical reasons. We had to get home. Those are negative. Did we stumble upon the current distribution of pike minnow? Did we get lucky? It seems, statistically, it seems super reasonable to assume that maybe we did. But these seem anomalous. So that's something to keep in mind, too. Like, we might know where they're at today, for now, until they decide to leave. So discussion, why aren't they pervasive? Some theories have been tossed around. Otter predation, we don't have a lot of food to eat, and you're an otter, you're going to eat the biggest fish in the river, so maybe if there's a few pike minnow, that's what you go after. And they just can't get traction in a place to where they're the only potentially big fish in the river. Maybe split rock is 99% effective. Like I was saying, that one-way valve to where they can get in, but once they leave, they can't get back, so there's not really a resident population. Or maybe it's just good luck. Maybe the flow conditions haven't been perfect during the springtime migration window. I don't know. So can we eradicate and prevent invasion? I would argue that if we're going to go for it, now's the time to strike, where we have low abundance and we know where they're at. We think we know where they're at. And it's maybe right at this cusp of having a lot of sexually mature fish in the system, that once they get spawning, it's probably a snowball. Maybe where we're at in the Eel River in 79 or 80, slipping away. And it's super low risk because it's lethal to be a steelhead in the North Fork Eel in the summer. We saw one in 15 miles in our surveys, and it was hugged up against a cold water seep. Like hugging it, literally, like press up against it. It was 28 degrees Celsius. It was bad. So you can be aggressive, and there are a handful of suckers in the reach as well. So you would have low risk of having take of listed species. And this is what we'll talk about here today, but are there effective eradication methods? The pools are deep or where the fish are at, most likely, so you'd have to go netting or spearing or something like that. But perhaps you could have a series of nets that could nab them. We know there's only a few, so maybe if we're just persistent, we'd have good luck. So we're gonna expand the monitoring next year. We're gonna try to cover the whole main stem. Anyone here is invited to join us. We'll need a little bit bigger crew. We'll attempt suppression if feasible or allowable. And just want to pitch this out there today because it's such a unique situation. Like we're watching a potential invasion happening in real time. That there's some probably some cool research ideas that I haven't thought of yet that you might be having. Maybe it's a genetic question. You know, we have a few pikemen colonized the eel, and now a subset of those might be colonizing a whole tributary of it. So you have like maybe siblings, you know, like incestuous pike minnow colonizing a river. Like, can that happen? Are they going to be successful there? Like, there's some stuff that could be interesting to track. And then maybe see if you know, there's otter scat in the system. Maybe we could guess how many pike minnow they're eating and figure out if maybe they are that press disturbance that's peaking them low. So here's what I'd like to thank. Without these folks, we couldn't have done it. But I know I'm out of time, so yeah.